I'm very happy now to welcome Lili. She is an artist, and she will be speaking tomorrow night at the Amigos Bravos Water Matters Lecture Series about her installation, Plastic Ocean. It's at 5:30 at the Santa Fe Community Foundation. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So, Plastic Ocean is an interactive installation. Describe it.
It's an interactive installation that is also a collaboration on an international scale. So I became concerned about plastic in the ocean after seeing the striking work by Chris Jordan, who photographed the albatross in Midway Atoll, who were fed, the baby albatross fed plastic by their moms, and it makes them feel full, but they don't get nourishment, obviously, and they end up dying. And he photographed these nests of these birds decayed around these little plastic bits. And as a new mom, when I first saw that work, I was so just torn apart by that because I was feeding my own child. And
yeah.
And you just, it's an emotional time, I think, in general.
Yeah.
And it stuck with me. I didn't know how to address it in my own work yet, but it really struck a chord. And over the next few years, I had been doing work that had a lot to do with agriculture, industrial versus sustainable, and one of the big parts of agriculture are the chemicals that are used in it. And I began to draw parallels between these albatross feeding their babies and what we're feeding our babies, essentially.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, when you talk about you feel full but there's no nourishment, that's kind of familiar.
Right. Yeah, very, very, very much so. And then I discovered the work of Theo Kolborn, who wrote an amazingly insightful and a bit apocalyptic book called Our Stolen Future, which is largely about the chemical body burdens that we carry. She started this organization called the Endocrine Disruption Exchange. It's just up in Colorado, near
right.
Paonia, I think, as a platform for scientists to gather information and share it on these studies on endocrine disruption, which has an impact on wildlife as it does on humans. And some of our biggest health concerns right now are becoming stronger and stronger. The connection between the chemicals that are found in plastic, that are found in agriculture and, you know, dirty technologies and things that we're seeing way too much of these days.
And it all has to do with petroleum extraction.
Yes, yes. So one really interesting thing about plastic, because it is made out of petrochemicals, is that when it's in the ocean, it absorbs really high concentrations of persistent organic pollutants that end up in the oceans because it drains from inland use. And these chemicals are so persistent that even the DDT and PCBs that we stopped using a couple generations ago still persist in the ocean. As the plastic gets broken up into smaller and smaller bits, and it absorbs these high concentrations of chemicals, they get eaten by the fish accidentally, desorb into their flesh, and enter into the marine food web. Which, of course, we're a part of as well. So it's
right.
I think that's the one bridge between the symbolic parallel of, you know, mama albatross feeding their babies and us feeding our babies. There's just kind of that direct connection within the marine food web as well.
So, I drink a bottle of soda. The bottle gets thrown out, it gets into the ocean, it breaks up into little pieces, it absorbs chemicals that came from fertilizer or PCBs or other things that we consider poisons. Those things are eaten by fish. Other fish eat them. We eat some of those fish. And the whole cycle goes around.
Yeah. Yeah. So these chemicals are really fat-loving. And interestingly enough, the highest concentrations are found in North and South Pole wildlife, polar bears and seals, because it becomes more and more concentrated as it's consumed, and it just ends up in these animals that rely on their fat for survival.
And so there's another piece of it too, which is that when plastic that we use, often single-use plastic, ends up in the ocean, it breaks up into smaller and smaller pieces to where it's the size of plankton,
right,
which is the base of the food web.
Right, right. And so, and then it's also such an important thing even for inlanders, because plankton produces a third of the oxygen we breathe and captures a third of our carbon. So we can't clean up the plastic in the ocean because we would be picking up all the plankton, which is essential to our own survival, even as we dwell.
So we've got a big problem.
Yeah, I should say.
And you were addressing it, among other ways, through this installation that you're working on called Plastic Ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, it took me a while to come to a point where I had a way of interpreting it. I remember a conversation with a Pacific fisherman who spent a lot of time in the gyres. His name was Jerry Brown. I met him at the Terra Madre conference in Italy, and he was so excited that someone was connecting our problems with chemical use in agriculture to the oceans, because he saw it so much. And he had this story where there was a tsunami in Japan, which they followed all the debris across the ocean until it landed on the northwest coast. And he said it was so interesting because when it started to land, all of these photojournalists came out and started taking pictures of like the big pieces of dock or whatever, that because it was the most sensational image.
The northwest coast of
the U.S.
the United States
came across. And he just shook his head. He said, you know, that those big pieces, whether they're man-made or natural, are an essential part of the open ocean ecosystem. The problem is the little tiny bits. And so as a visual artist, I started to think, well, how can you make this so impactful without relying on these sensational images that aren't really having to do with the problem? So I came up with a way to communicate this through these little tiny images the size of your palm that are grouped together in these installations that participants can move around, but then they can also make their own fish to or creatures to release into this ocean. So it becomes a collaboration that has engaged people in the Mediterranean and the Caribbean. I'm looking to go to Maine and then the Bay Area this summer to continue it.
We're talking to artist Lee Lee about her work, Plastic Ocean, an Interactive Installation. I was looking at some of your images, and one of the things that is so striking to me is that they're really beautiful, but plastic is in some ways really ugly, and there's a kind of dialectic with that.
Yeah, I think that it's so important to make beautiful images, even as you're addressing kind of horrendous subjects, so that it can be engaging. Chris Jordan, the artist who I mentioned before, after he did these images of the albatross, did a film so that he could demonstrate the beauty on Midway Atoll, the diversity of life and why it's essential or, you know, important to protect. And I think that's a really important philosophy to weave into creative. You have to make it engaging so that people will spend time with it.
So where's the physical work right now? Are we going to be able to have the chance to see it? Are you showing it in slides?
No, I'm going to bring in a smaller example of the installation. The bulk of it is coming back from France right now. But it is one, because they're all these little tiny pieces. It can, one, be in several places at once, and it can be in a small space or grow to a very large space. So it's flexible, I guess. So I'll bring in a little example of what I'm talking about, and hopefully it will strike some interest and engagement. I think it's also important to connect this issue to how we dwell in the inland areas. The ocean can seem so far away from people in New Mexico, but really we are connected to it. So,
well, anybody who eats fish is connected to it.
Right. And our activities here have an impact on it. You know, I know that there's a lot of conversation around fracking and the chemicals there, I think are an issue that we need to consider carefully before they're released, because the thing about the persistent organic pollutants, the chemicals, they're just, there is no way to reclaim them once they're released into the environment.
And that's the thing that is so daunting about this whole subject. As you say, you can't just go into the ocean and take out the plastic because you're taking out the plankton.
Right.
And so what are we to do?
My feeling is that just as the installation is, you know, both a literal interpretation of the plastic as well as a symbolic representation of the chemical body burdens we're carrying, I feel like if we address our own health and the health of our families, which means really look at your shampoos and lotions and cosmetics, your personal care products, really look at the food you're eating and where it's sourced and how it's grown. If you take care of your family, your community, then that's really going to have larger impacts on the environment in which we dwell. It's tied to a lot of the issues that we're facing right now. And I think that there are ways to do it that we do have control over. There are other situations we don't have control over. But if we really take hold of our own day-to-day lives, that is a great place to start. There's a great resource through the Environmental Working Group. I believe it's EWG.org. And they go into great detail about how you can take care of yourself and your family. And that, as an extension, will have an impact.
So talk more about the installation and the interactive nature of it.
Yeah, so when images are made, either by myself or other artists, or often children participate, because I think it's an educational tool, copy them, the images, the fish, onto repurposed foam core, which is a very light material. I put Velcro on the back of it, and it's mounted on felt, which can be mounted to a wall or a board on the wall, or it's also flexible about how we can work with the space. But I think it's a great tool to engage children, especially to think about what's taken for granted. I think it's a great tool to let people consider cultural notions of disposability and waste and what that means. There's actually a great book by Edward Humes that just came out called Garbology that goes into the study of trash. And he claims, you know, one of our biggest things that we're passing on to our kids or leaving to our kids is garbage, which is kind of disheartening, you know. I think we should leave something better to our children, and I think that it's a gift for children to be able to consider that and what they want to say about that. I took the project to France for a recent exhibition. And they had it in a more formal gallery space where children could interact with it, move it around, explore the interconnections of the marine food web. And then there was a table where they could make their own fish and add it into the ocean. We did a project in Tortola, or near Tortola in the British Virgin Islands. And that was a little bit different. The artists I collaborated with there, Aragorn, had more of a performance-based idea. He has a workshop right on the beach in Trellis Bay and had a New Year's gathering where hundreds of people gathered. And just before the New Year, he has these big sculptures that he lights on fire above the water. And right before they flamed up, he released hundreds of glowing plastic bottles because it was upwind and could wash ashore, which was such an interesting kind of symbolic message in a bottle returned to this gathering of people that I thought was really poignant. And unexpectedly, the island kids kind of rushed through and picked up all the bottles, which was a perfect end to that little performance piece. And that wasn't directly related to this particular installation, but it was inspired by it. And I love maintaining an openness to the way other creatives will interpret and want to express the theme. I also did some work in Haiti this winter. And while it wasn't directly related to this project, I noticed that it's such a huge source of debris in the ocean because the government doesn't think it's worth it to pick up the trash, unfortunately. And I was working with a community of artists who used a lot of repurposed material and got a couple images from the children there after they heard about the project that were these voodoo loa, these kind of traditional protectors of the sea. And I thought that was such a wonderful contribution. It's not something that I could make because it's not my culture, you know, but to embrace these different cultural interpretations and just bring them into the fold and as an expression of their own concern about waste and the oceans, I think is a lot of fun, really.
We're talking to artist Lee Lee about her work, Plastic Ocean, an Interactive Installation. So are you going around, I mean, the world, and then collecting the pieces, the material pieces? I mean, obviously it has a performance element too, and kind of showing an ever-growing body of this work?
Yes.
It reminds me of the AIDS quilt.
Oh, yeah. And as it's inserted into classrooms, you know, it went up to the Museum of Natural History at the University of Colorado. The kids really love looking on a map and seeing where all the voices are coming from and where their works are going to travel to as well. So I think it's something that's going to unfold over years. I don't think, unfortunately, that it's a problem that's going to be solved, but anytime soon at least. But I think it's a way to let people consider that the best way to curb it is at the source, because it's impossible to clean up. We need to just question these cultural norms that have only developed in the past generation or so about how much packaging we use and consume and just throw away.
So what are your hopes for this project? Is it primarily about inspiring young people, about inspiring everybody to change their habits?
I feel like I'm going to primarily direct it towards young people because they're not so ingrained into the habits that we have been. And I feel like they are such an important collaborator in engaging families to look at their actions, you know, because they go back into the hearts of their families. When they start looking around and talking with their parents about this concern, then the parents listen to them because they care about them. So I think they're good activists in that way because they bring up issues within the core of their families.
So you'll be talking about this project, the installation Plastic Ocean, and showing us work from that tomorrow night.
Yes, absolutely. And also drawing connections about how we are directly connected even though we are inland dwellers. You know, there's actually been talk about how there's a gyre in the middle of the Southwest Desert in Arizona. It's a different character, but it's having an impact on wildlife.
Right.
Yeah, because of all the waste. And I think just an overall excitement. I hope to share how exciting it is that this project is gaining momentum so quickly. And I think that's because it's really striking a chord with people. I think that it is empowering to have an outlet for people to express these kinds of concerns. And perhaps people will step forward with ways to engage this community with an installation or in a school or in a community place where people can really jump in and contribute some marine life to it.
If, for example, teachers or students or artists who are listening to this want to participate in some way, how can they do so?
I'm posting the projects on the website virtualvoices.org.
Virtualvoices.org, all one word.
Yeah, and there are details on how to participate that way. And people just randomly have sent me images as they've heard about the project, which is fun. There was a woman from New Jersey who just sent an image of a rubber duck that was surrounded by yellow and kind of fractured on the inside, which was so perfect to me because there was this one case where a container of rubber ducks was coming over from China and fell off the ship. And for years, people found these rubber ducks washing up more and more and more decayed. I think they're still washing up, but they're at the state where they're completely unrecognizable now. But it was such a perfect...
That's kind so of weird.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, such a symbol of childhood just becoming...
Right, not as innocent and sweet as we had once thought it was. And that's, I mean, I think that's what this is about in so many ways. I mean, you look at the life that was created post-World War II that was so kind of comfortable compared to life before that and seemed sort of safe and turns out not to be because it's based on a petroleum economy and a petroleum material life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, I think they had to change the composition of the rubber ducks because they had phthalates in them, which is a big endocrine disruptor, and it took years for them to prove scientifically that this was really bad for us. And they finally changed the recipe, and they're finding, you know, of course, in the BPA-free linings of cans and whatnot, that there are, it's the chemical composition is equally as disruptive. It's just.
Is that right?
Yeah, unfortunately. You know, they run tests on the BPA free, and it's not just one chemical in plastic. It's made up of a whole range of unknowns, and we're finding that those just don't really sync with our bodies.
Yeah, and once you start to really think about that and really internalize it, then you start thinking, okay, how am I going to live my own life? I remember a couple of years ago we had a documentary film about plastic water bottles, and I was watching it on a DVD at home getting ready to write questions to interview the woman, and in the middle of the documentary I just turned it off and ordered a soda stream water fizzer online because I couldn't bear the fact that I drink so much fizzy water out of plastic bottles and have been using that ever since. And have, you know, it makes a huge difference, one action like that. But then you think, well, you still drink your fruit juice. Are you drinking that out of plastic bottles? What if you were to get a blender and make fruit smoothies instead? And each of these things is a thought that then takes action, and that action can be kind of a cumbersome or a pain in the neck, but then you realize it's not really that bad compared to what you're saving.
Yeah.
And those are the thought kind of processes that I think a lot of us have to really follow to their end.
Right. I feel like a lot of it has to do with habits. Just simply grabbing your bag when you're going to the store, you know, so you don't use all the plastic bags. I remember a conversation with a friend of mine who is the engineer and drives the Alvin submarine that goes to the bottom of the ocean to study those deep sea vents. And he said just how horrified he was to get to the bottom of the ocean, the most remote place on Earth, and see a plastic bag floating by.
Oh my goodness.
Horrible. Horrible. But I think, like you say, it's about paying attention about what we consume in our day-to-day lives and changing simple habits.
And it's about, ultimately, it's about policy, because the thoughtful, creative artists like you will change your habits, and then the rest of us will do it, you know, step by step. But until Santa Fe bans plastic bags, which they did, things don't really change on a mass scale.
Right, right. And it takes, I mean, the whole plastic bag ban movement takes people being aware and concerned about it. And I think that's one of the role in the arts, is to engage people in a creative and positive way and let them realize what the issues are so that they can become those concerned citizens who are taking action and demanding those policy changes.
Lili is an artist. Her installation is called Plastic Ocean, an interactive installation. She will be speaking at the Amigos Bravos Water Matters Lecture. It's a monthly series, and it's happening tomorrow night at 5:30 at the Santa Fe Community Foundation on Helena Street here in Santa Fe. Tell us once again the website that people can go to find out more about your work.
Virtualvoices.org.
Virtualvoices.org.
Yeah.
Lili, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much.